public. Now, how about, is there a sleeping code as well that you're aware
no.
of?
Mm.
No. Mm. Have you you've never been ticketed under a sleeping
no.
code?
No.
And you've slept out frequently?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
That's it. That's a citation.
Thank you.
That's the municipal.
Margaret Ash.
Hey, Margaret. I'm Robert Norris.
Hi. Nice
this is
to
Charlie
meet.
Phillips.
Hi.
Nice are you too. With the group or?
Yes, well, we're sort of.
Santa Cruz.
We came over from Santa Cruz.
Oh.
I'm with a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Daniel Hopkins is with a group called the Common Thread Coalition, and Charlie Phillips is a freelance video photographer who doesn't have his camera with him.
And we've I've been at City Hall for 62 days now. We've been protesting the sleeping ban over there, and there's about 15, 20 of us, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we're hoping to do something. We're probably going to have to be there at least a couple more months. I think we're about to get something done, though, because we're starting to have all kinds of groups join us, you know, community organizations and things, and little by little our support is increasing.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
So what's your situation, Margaret? Why are you here today?
Well, I'm a very low-income person. I've lived in Palo Alto for about 20 years. I was a volunteer at the Urban Ministry for a while, and I was really disappointed in the level of services, and I was kind of outspoken about it, and eventually I was asked to leave. So about that time, Shaq was putting up some flyers, and
Shaq is
Stanford Homelessness Action Coalition. That's
how old is Shaq now?
Shaq's been in downtown Palo Alto off campus for about 4 years now, but it was in existence 4 or 5 years before that, I believe.
Mm.
So it's been around for a while, I think. I'm not exactly sure of the dates.
And how long have you been with it?
I've been with them about 3.5 years, almost from the time they came downtown, too.
And what has Shaq done in the last 3.5 years while you've been with it that, I see today you're throwing a rally with Food Not Bombs. I saw it described as a teach-in and rally and music activity. What's happened in the past with Shaq?
Well, most of what Shaq does is we have weekly meetings that include homeless people. Homeless people are part of Shaq.
And low-income people like yourself.
And low-income people like myself.
Right.
And we have petitioned, or we go to city council meetings, ask the city to provide housing for the homeless, ask them to improve services. We do that on a regular basis. One of the responses we got was anti-aggressive panhandling ordinance.
Now, was there actually such an ordinance passed?
No, it was not passed.
You helped defeat such an ordinance?
Yes.
And that was last year?
I was on the task force. Yes, that was last year. And we managed to keep them from recommending an ordinance.
What do you recommend to people who are bothered by panhandlers?
Well, I recommend, as far as I know, that there any all the complaints that I've heard toward panhandlers, most of them involve legal activity, and
aggressive panhandlers.
Talking about abusive.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Really. What do you
if you're talking
like, give
about
me some money, fuck you.
I think there are laws to cover behavior like that. I think that you would do the same thing with a panhandler as you would with any other person on the street who behaved that way toward you. There are disturbing the peace and all kinds of ordinances to protect people, and if you want to pursue it, then you can. I don't think that's really what most people object to as far as panhandling. I think panhandlers make them feel uncomfortable about, and some of them in Palo Alto, I think they're uncomfortable about their own affluency when they see panhandlers on the streets. They say they're an eyesore. Over and over again in meetings, I've heard people complain about panhandlers claiming that there's criminal behavior going on, but then when they actually get up there and they verbalize what it is that bothers them, it's not actually criminal behavior. It's usually just appearance or language they might object to, so on and so forth. Or just, I've heard many people say there's just too many of them on the streets.
Well, how do you account for the fact that Palo Alto the Palo Alto civil rights people, and I remember you and Jonathan here among them, could defeat this kind of an ordinance, while in Santa Cruz, we have one of the worst panhandling laws in the state,
That's
which
right.
was passed.
We haven't defeated this ordinance yet.
No. But you have delayed it, at least.
We
right?
have delayed it. We've made it difficult for them. They're still trying. The city attorney is still trying to write a legal ordinance.
Nikki Snyder.
I think that the community and probably the country in general is sympathetic to homeless people. And for the business community and the moneyed interest to try to pass these laws is difficult for them to do. And especially when people get up and stand up and speak against that kind of behavior.
Now, what were the mechanics of the attempt to pass the law last year? Was it just proposed and discussed and it didn't even pass a first reading, or what happened there?
Well, no, it was proposed by three council members, and we knew in advance that it was going to be, it was put onto the agenda. But unfortunately, there was another agenda item that moved it to the following week. If that hadn't happened,
it would have passed.
It might have passed because we didn't know it was on the agenda.
Right.
I happened to be at the city council meeting there that night by myself. Now, I could have gotten up and opposed it, but they probably wouldn't have listened to me and they would have passed the ordinance. Fortunately, it was delayed until the next week, and we got ourselves together and got enough people down there to, in oral communications, to object to it. And then they had to form the task force.
And so what is the task force that they formed?
I beg your pardon?
What was this task force that they formed?
Well, they just called it the anti-aggressive panhandling task force.
They kicked the homeless out of town task force?
Yeah, that's the one. Right.
Move them on to somebody else.
How many members do you have in Shack?
Our numbers fluctuate a lot. Our numbers fluctuate with the time of year for the students, because students come and go, and with the homeless people. I mean,
how many homeless people in Palo Alto generally?
We estimate between 150 and 200 permanent homeless people in Palo Alto.
Where are they sleeping presently?
They hide around. They creeks, parks, little nooks and crannies, wherever they can hide.
And I understand from Jonathan, there's no ordinance at this time of camping ban or ordinance.
It has to be specific and be designed to a certain place.
And
I mean, you can't sleep in churches and, I mean, but if you have
but
church's consent,
you can sleep in your vehicle, you can sleep in the surrounding suburbs.
Unless you're not over the time limit, the curb limit.
Public lands,
mm-hmm.
You can speak on it. You can sleep.
There has recently been parks. There is an ordinance as far as the parks, not sleeping in the parks after a certain hour.
What about your vehicle?
No, you can't do that because then you're over parking. Because there's a two-hour parking limit.
Well, after hours. There are people who do that. I know that there are. And I know that they get hassled. I don't think there's an actual ordinance against it, but I could be wrong. I'm not real up on that one.
You don't have the ordinance at hand.
No. I'm not even sure there is one.
So what are the objectives?
Something I need to look into, actually. I'm
curious about that. That's one of the major concerns of people in Santa Cruz. We have the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, which makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night on any public property, in any vehicle, on any private property except for a fenced-in side yard or backyard.
No, Santa Cruz had a lot of problems.
No, they still do.
We consider our city council members in the sleeping van to be the primary problem. At least that's the way I look at it. But what problems are you thinking of, John?
Well, just from what people told me who came from Santa Cruz, they all got busted. They all got...
Oh, right. Yeah, they definitely give people a lot of problems. No question about that. So you've been with us for 4 years, and you found the institution you were working with before, what was it called? The Ministry?
The Urban Ministry of Palo Alto.
And it was sort of a cheesy group? I mean, what happened?
They're a bunch of
urban
frauds. What they are.
The Urban Ministry, many of the people, some of the people in the Urban Ministry are genuinely want to help. I think that there's some sort of unspoken, or at least there was some sort of unspoken agreement between the Urban Ministry, that the Urban Ministry would keep the homeless down behind the Red Cross, out of sight,
sure,
in the backyard.
Of course there was.
And the residents wouldn't be bothered with having to see them around, and that was the plan. And that they would give them a bus ticket out of town, or send them to a shelter somewhere else in Sunnyvale or something like that. I mean,
that's not the solution to the problem.
But basically, that's what they were doing.
That's exactly what. Because I talked to Gretchen this morning. I talked to her yesterday, too.
Gretchen is the secretary of the
chairman of the board. And she said, how's it going? I said, rotten. I went and asked for my check today, and they wouldn't give it to me. And she said, well, that's typical. And I remember the first time I met Gretchen, I had trouble with, what's his name? And she said, if you have any trouble with him again, I sign his checks. And you come back and you tell me, if he does this again to you, tell me. And yeah. I'll go after. Gretchen can have teeth.
Well, when I was a volunteer at the Urban Ministry, which is the only organization in Palo Alto dealing with the homeless, any complaints by what they call, quote, clients, were pretty much just ignored.
Yeah.
I mean, and as a matter of fact, there were sometimes retaliatory actions against them when they complained. And
Such as
they couldn't get into the Hotel de Zinc. This is what people told me, that they couldn't get into Hotel de Zinc. Once a group of African Americans were objecting to services at the Urban Ministry, and all of a sudden they cut back on food. They literally cut back on food. They stopped serving sandwiches at noon. When I first started working there, they served sandwiches. They had this little mini demonstration, and all of a sudden, no more sandwiches.
And what was the reaction of the homeless community, to blame the demonstrators or to blame the Urban Ministry?
I don't think, at that time, I think that the Urban Ministry had been going along that way for about a decade, and people, there wasn't enough awareness as to how they, or attitude about how they should be treated, that they weren't being treated with enough respect and with enough regard for their needs. And so,
do you have a telephone yourself?
Because
yeah.
Can you be reached, for instance, if we want to interview you for Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Sure.
What's your number?
Second and last task force.
So, Margaret, you've been on another task force. What was that?
That was the creek cleanup task force.
I see. And who appointed you to this thing?
Dave Martin of the Human Relations Commission of the City of Palo Alto.
And was he pleased with his appointee or not?
No, he wasn't very pleased. As a matter of fact,
what was his body supposed to study? What were you supposed to?
Well, this task force was formed by the chief of police, Chief Durkin, of the city of Palo Alto, and along with Bay Area Action and some other groups, environmental groups, were concerned about the health of the creek, because there were a group of people, maybe 10 or 12 at the most, I think, 15 at the most, were sleeping under one of the bridges on the El Camino. And they, off and on over the years, they've tried to force people from under the bridge, from sleeping under the bridge. So the chief decided to have this task force, and he thought he had a lot of neighborhood support, and the environmentalists would support it. Actually, the environmentalists have been working all along the creek, but this particular place was an interest to Durkin and the city of Palo Alto. So I was actually appointed late to the task force, and I only attended one meeting. I brought some homeless people with me.
All right.
To the meeting.
Very good. How many?
And we had about 15, 16 people out front. And I wasn't informed until the night before the actual meeting. I kept calling and calling to try to find out. I believe there were meetings that I didn't manage to attend.
Maybe they didn't tell you about
them. Yeah. So we came with a little group of people, and one of the homeless people came inside and objected very strongly to the fact that they wouldn't include him in the meeting because he did sleep in the creek and he wanted to be included in the decisions that the city made about it. And the chief still refused to let him attend the meeting.
To attend the meeting? I mean, not to be a member of the board, but to just attend.
Not even to sit in and listen to the meeting.
Well, was he smeared with shit? I mean, was he screaming at the top of his lungs? Did he have a communicable
disease? No, he wasn't. He was loud. He wasn't loud at first. He was very polite.
Mm-hmm.
He said that there were several people who had invited him to come down and see if he could get into the meeting, and that I was one of them, and that he couldn't understand why he wouldn't be allowed to come into the meeting when it directly affected him. And the chief just said that it was his task force, and he didn't have to, and he could bring whoever he liked into the meeting. He did.
Is the chief an elected official?
I believe he's appointed.
Well, there's a Brown Act question there, but...
Yeah, I know. I was wondering about that myself, but according to the Dave Martin of the Human Relations Commission, that this, that Durkin was, it was legal for Durkin to do this, and we didn't, since they, well, I attended the meeting, and during the meeting, I pointed out that there was no alternative for these people, and a lot of the neighbors and the environmental, the people with the environmental interests changed their mind.
And supported the homeless.
Yes, they did.
And you think that that was due to the presentations by the homeless people you brought to the meeting?
I think that the fact that there was what was later referred to as a mini demonstration outside definitely had an impact.
And what was that mini demonstration? What did it involve?
That was about maybe 15, 20 people outside asking to come into the task force, holding up signs, talking to reporters. A number of reporters showed up.
From
the Palo Alto Weekly, from the Chronicle, and from, is there another one? I believe one from the Mercury came.
Now, I talked to Jonathan, and I also talked to, who was sitting here before?
Brian.
And I also talked to an employee of Starbucks, a woman named Yolanda, the day after this incident of the police chief.
Tony Pipel?
Yeah. Who was arrested for allegedly assaulting a city council person?
Yeah.
And what's the straight dope on this one, Margaret?
Well, the straight dope is...
Well, let's say who's the straight dope in this?
The straight dope is Gary Fazzino, a city council member.
Yes.
Who, along with another city council person... what's her name?
Isn't this the one who was outside who allegedly got assaulted?
The one who was allegedly attacked.
Her name was mentioned in the Chronicle.
Huh?
Mickey Schneider.
Thanks, Jonathan. So here, they're going downtown to check out the quality of the downtown area because they've had reports that the downtown area is going to hell. So they're going to go check it out for themselves. And there's the chief of police, Durkin, city council member Gary Fazzino, city councilwoman Mickey Schneider, and city manager June Fleming. And maybe city council member Liz Niss, I'm not sure about that. And as they come around the corner of Noah's and Starbucks, one homeless man, well, let me tell, I should have started this from the beginning.
Begin at the beginning, go ahead, so, and then proceed to the end.
After the city council had formed the task force and it ended, it was agreed that the homeless people should police themselves as far as behavior went. And Mickey Schneider said she agreed to that. She participated on the anti-aggressive panhandling task force.
So the police chief actually and the city council person concurred that there should be self-policing or self-regulation in the matter of panhandling.
We tried... and behavior by the homeless.
What kind of behavior are we talking about?
Any kind of nuisance behavior, yes it is.
Such as being poor, let's say?
Yeah, exactly, that kind of nuisance. Being an eyesore or whatever.
Right.
So, the city council, there's this man, Michael Anthony, who is a homeless man. And he hangs out down at Noah's and Starbucks, drinking coffee, and then at closing he helps take out the trash, and I think he gets some bagels from Noah's for helping with the cleanup. So he said he's concerned about keeping the corner clean. He enjoys that space. He meets with people.
Down at University Avenue.
Yeah, down on the corner of Bryant and University in downtown Palo Alto. So along comes, this is 9 o'clock in the morning. Michael is sitting at outside of Starbucks or Noah's. And Tony the trash artist comes along.
And who is Tony the trash artist?
Tony the trash artist is a man who has been in Palo Alto for many years. And at least within the last couple of months, he has been erecting what he calls trash shrines.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony says that he's got a message for the community with his trash shrines.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sits in a very particular way. He sits up. empty cups, magazines with the pages turned to particular articles. And to Tony, these are very important. Sometimes he hangs them from trees. And Michael objected to Tony putting up his trash art at the wall where the public seating is at Noah's and told Tony he had to take it down. And this enrages Tony. Tony has been described by some, although they aren't psychiatrists, as a manic depressive.
What do you say?
I don't personally know Tony. From his behavior, I would say that there's probably is a psychological problem, but I don't know.
Okay.
So Tony has put up his trash art, and Michael is insisting that he take it down. And so Michael says he's going to go into Starbucks and have the clerk call the police if Tony doesn't take his stuff off the wall. So Michael goes in to call the police. Well, in the meantime, Tony decides to find one of what Palo Alto now calls their community police, or I don't know.
Community relations officer, maybe?
It's a volunteer sort of.
Public service officer.
Yeah. So Tony sees this guy in a light blue uniform across the street, and he goes over and he wants to tell this officer that Michael is trying to throw away his belongings.
Mm-hmm.
So about that time, the city council comes around the corner.
Sounds like a real circus. What a play here. I think you got the makings of a playwright.
It's bizarre. So as they're coming around the corner, according to Michael Anthony, Gary Fazzino, city council member Gary Fazzino, is saying to the group, okay, we're coming to this corner where we've got a problem with the homeless. This is a place we have to watch out for. Michael is very concerned about this trash being there. He knows who they are.
Right.
And he doesn't want them to see all the trash up there.
Right.
So when they come around the corner, Michael starts explaining that Tony had put up this trash.
Right.
And is it okay if he throws it away? And Gary Fazzino and Chief Durkin say, yeah, you know, this shouldn't be here. And they start taking Tony Fipel's stuff and throwing it in the trash can. Well, Tony rushes back from across the street and...
The enraged artist.
Yes. And says, somebody call the police. Somebody call the police. He doesn't know that
we
Chief
are
Durkin...
The police, right.
He doesn't... Durkin is in plain clothes. He doesn't know that Durkin is police. So then Michael Anthony picks up two boxes of Tony's belongings and turns to Durkin and says, can I throw these away? Durkin says, yes. Tony, by this time, he tries to put Durkin under citizen's arrest.
Ah, I love it.
And Durkin mocks him by saying, well, I'm sorry, but it just doesn't fit into my schedule today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this enrages Tony by this time. His personal belongings, not the stuff on the wall,
right,
but his personal belongings are being carried to the dumpster by a group. He grabs, unfortunately...
The councilwoman.
Yeah, she is standing in front of... This is according to a sworn statement by Michael Anthony. Mickey Schneider, the city councilwoman. Chief Durkin's behind Mickey Schneider.
Right.
So he grabs her and shakes her. By this time, the police show up.
Tempest and Teapot here.
It turns out, I have the police report here, by the way. It turns out that he had food in the boxes that they were throwing away.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had some personal hygiene items in the box. It wasn't that they were throwing away trash. They may have been throwing something away that he actually really needed.
Did Michael know this guy, Tony? I mean, were they friends? Or
no, well, actually, there's some...
Hostile to each other?
I'm going to have to do something here pretty soon. But, yeah, Michael did know him, and there had been actually some friction between them before that incident.
What's happened to Tony since?
As far as I haven't seen him. As far as I know, he's in jail. I know he comes up for trial on the 13th of April.
Have you spoken to the council members about this and to try to, you know, because the whole story sounds like if the whole picture were known, it might throw a different light on the matter.
Yeah, I read...
Chronicle had a completely slanted story.
I know.
And I got a different story when I called a woman named Yolanda, who worked, I think, at Starbucks or at Noah's. She talked to a woman on the street called Pat, I believe, or I'm not sure if that's the right name.
Oh, not Pat.
And she said that, it was a case of the story I got was the police chief was taking this guy's stuff and dumping it in order to please a city council person. Now, in fact, it turns out it was a homeless person who initiated all this. Mike.
In a way, as far as I'm concerned, the chief didn't act very professionally when he told the homeless man that he could dump somebody's personal belongings, first of all.
He's showing his prejudices rather than his knowledge of the law.
Right. It just seems to me, I've seen other uniformed officers on the street, and they don't just throw things, personal belongings.
The chief is the law. I got news for you.
I got to
let you go. Listen, yeah. Thank you. And
you're
we'll
welcome.
Try to grab you later.
Sure. Thank you for being here.
You're here.
Yay.
All right. Mm-hmm. You want to make some announcements? Do I?
Yeah.
I wanted to make a tirade here.
Go for it.
I'm from Santa Cruz. My name is Robert Norris, and I've brought you some of our local heroes here. The guy who's juggling and is giving out literature, he's walking around without a shirt on, the blue cap. His name is Dan Hopkins. I call him Dragon's Heart Dan because he and a group of people in Santa Cruz, people without homes, have been sitting in front of City Hall and sleeping in front of City Hall and educating people in front of our Santa Cruz City Hall for the last 63 days. This is day 63. And they have been facing... Thank you. Yeah, they are in fact, they've been arrested various times. One man is currently in jail. He began a hunger strike yesterday. His name is Sean Alini, and there are two others who are supporting him in Santa Cruz, a fellow named Jimmy Riley and another man named Matt Smith from Dayton Food Not Bombs, who was passing through town and just was so impressed with what was going on, he decided to stay and join this testament to conscience. Because the issue in Santa Cruz is... for many of us, among other issues, the right to engage in ordinary human activities that are necessary for the maintenance of life, such as sleeping. I understand here in Palo Alto, your sleeping situations is a law against sleeping in the parks, but in Santa Cruz, we have a law against sleeping anywhere. We have a law against sleeping in any public place after 11 o'clock at night. We have a law against sleeping in any vehicle after 11 o'clock at night. There is a law against sleeping on private property with the permission of the owner after 11 o'clock at night, with the exception of a fenced-in side yard or backyard. This puts the 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz in an illegal status after 11 o'clock at night. So, for years, we've been we've been asking City Council diplomatically, angrily, hoarsely to change this law. Because, for example, in Santa Barbara in 1986, there was a similar law that made it illegal for people literally to sleep at night. It's also illegal in Santa Cruz to cover up with blankets when you are not asleep after 11 o'clock at night. You can be arrested. And indeed, there have been more than 115 tickets issued at City Hall in the last 2 months for that offense in Santa Cruz. There is an additional provision of the law in Santa Cruz. If you engage in this heinous crime twice in 48 hours, you can face misdemeanor charges, which means up to 6 months in jail and $1,000 fine for two acts of sleeping in public. There are at least five people who are being charged with this in Santa Cruz. So there's a real crisis developing in Santa Cruz. We are trying to focus public attention on it.
I've kind of given you an old flyer. We took off today in a hurry. We didn't know where you were. We kind of stumbled around looking for you here in Stanford. This really is a flyer about the program you may have read about in the papers, which had a lot of brouhaha. It was a little program for 60 people, for homeless people to go to the parks, the state parks. And it was smashed by bigotry, but it was never a solution. It was the Santa Cruz City Council's proposal to try to avoid a real solution, which is to change the law. That's what we're trying to do in Santa Cruz, and indeed to change the law statewide, because these sleeping bans are not merely limited to Santa Cruz. They are, they're the policy of the police department in many cities. For instance, in San Francisco, even though Mayor Willie Brown on February 22nd announced there would be no further arrests under the Matrix program for sleeping, his police continue to harass, cite, and ticket people who are sleeping outside in San Francisco. So, I could go on for a long time. There are probably other people who want to talk. Different solutions have come up. Different proposals have come up. One proposal has come up from Santa Barbara activists is to do what they did in 1988, which was in 88, Santa Barbara activists walked across the country to dramatize human rights for the poor. They literally walked from Santa Barbara, California to Washington, D.C., and Santa Barbara was very active in the 80s. As I said, it's one of the few towns that through mass organizing ended its anti-homeless sleeping ban. Mitch Snyder, the national homeless activist, organized with local activists, and they organized hundreds and hundreds of homeless people to come to town on September Labor Day weekend and threaten to sleep in and fill the jails in Santa Barbara. And that threat produced a change in the sleeping ban in Santa Barbara, and for 3 years there was no sleeping ban in Santa Barbara. What we're trying to do in Santa Cruz is tell the city council there wasn't a mass influx of millions of people to Santa Barbara because people were granted basic human rights. Santa Cruz can allow people to sleep at night without having people from all over the world come to Santa Cruz to sleep on the wonderful hard pavements and to sleep in the one under the great bridges of Santa Cruz. And we'd like to get your support here. That's one of the reasons we came here today. We have this sleep out in front of City Hall. We know you're fighting a fight here against anti-homeless laws such as the panhandling law. You're fighting for affordable housing in San Jose. Similar things are happening in San Francisco on May 8th. There's going to be a homeless demonstration at City Hall to make sure that Brown does carry out his promises. True, he's dropped the tickets under the Jordan Matrix program, but he has not... He repeat, he has not decriminalized sleeping in San Francisco. It's illegal for you if you go up to San Francisco and you haven't got a place to be to sleep in Golden Gate Park or any other place outside. And those laws are still being enforced. So it's been proposed by Santa Barbara activists that we have a march from Santa Cruz through San Jose, through Palo Alto, through Mountain View, all the way up to San Francisco to dramatize the need to end these anti-homeless laws and to mobilize homeless people behind them. And I just want to kind of bring this up for you all to consider. And if there's more time later, I'll rant on later and tell you more. And I'll be giving out different pieces of literature for you to look at. And there's a number at the bottom of the literature, 423-HUFF. That's my phone number in Santa Cruz. Stands for HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's area code 408, so it's a long-distance call. And then one final thing. I was convicted of serving free food with Food Not Bombs in San Francisco in 1994. And in 2 days, I will be appearing before a court having been...
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, 96.3 FM. This is a show that happens twice a week, Mondays and Fridays at 10 in the morning. Usually going until 12. This is Bathrobe Spear Robert Norris. I'm back in the studio. It seems the meeting with Catherine Byers is happening tomorrow, not today. Tomorrow at 11 o'clock in front of City Hall. So, I'm back. Probably haven't got much time left, but there was an interesting interview. You have been listening, by the way, to the Stanford Housing Homelessness Action Coalition, which had a large meeting and protest demonstration about a month ago, a little less. We got some great information there. They had workshops, they had poetry, they had songs and speeches, and they had a lot of valuable information exchange between activists up there who were working with successfully holding off an anti-panhandling law, which the city council considered and then put aside, unlike our city council, which passed an anti-begging law back in 1994. So we're going to hear more of that at some point, but right now, and in case you're interested, you probably know, those of you who listen regularly, that my court date for serving free food will be June 7th, and that'll be at 1 o'clock at the... Actually, is it 1 o'clock? Yeah, I believe it is 1 o'clock in San Francisco at the Hall of Justice at Department 14. And there I will learn whether I will serve 2 months in jail for serving with food, not bombs, and more about that in shows to come. An area of the state we haven't had much information on recently has been Marin County. Marin County, richest county in the state, right above San Francisco Bay, has a homeless movement there too, and there's a crackdown against the homeless as well. So we called Bob King of the Homelessness Coalition. I used to live up in Marin County for a while, and I got to know him, and we've also been involved in demonstrations together. We went to support Terry Messman when we occupied a roof of the building in order to demand that the multi-service center be opened up in Oakland. We were successful in doing that. Terry then came down and supported us when we demanded that the Heiner House be opened up as affordable housing, and we had some success with that, though not all the success we had hoped. That was where Linda LeMaster was arrested, and actually for a time looked like she'd be running for city council in 1992 from jail. That's Lighthouse Linda here in Santa Cruz. Anyway, I talked to Bob King today, and here's an interview I had with him about the situation up in Marin County.
I'm on the line with Bob King of the, what do you call your group up in Marin, Bob?
Homeless in Action.
Homeless in Action. And what's happening up there?
Well, what's happening is there's been a continued crackdown on homeless people, mainly centered around St. Vincent's, the free dining room downtown.
Excellent meals, I remember.
Yeah, the merchants are really putting a lot of pressure on St. Vincent's to move. And that intensified when a city council person who has since retired, Mr. Zappatini, had his place burglarized, not by a homeless person from here, but actually someone who had been released from San Quentin and just got lumped into our population. Anyway, since then, the jaywalking citations have increased, and jaywalking from the parking lot across the street to St. Vincent's, you know, the only place to give jaywalking tickets in San Rafael, and things like that.
I see.
So that's one of the things they've been doing, and the second thing is they've been doing sweeps. People sleeping in the downtown area, especially in their vehicles, towing vehicles away, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and pretty much demanding St. Vincent's move. St. Vincent's is in a mediation process to that end. That'll end next week, the last week of that. Because all the hullabaloo, they probably will not be able to find a spot where they can move to. And
that will end
a pretty good spot where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Downtown San Rafael is just the right place for them.
You really have a Cadillac meal there. There's no question about it.
Yeah, it's the best and a very supportive atmosphere. Pat Gross, who is the director, is a real former Franciscan with a lot of heart, and he's made it a really nice place to be. So what we've been doing, been working with Carl Shapiro, and rather slowly, I guess we need to pick up the process, because we figured numerous violations of civil rights.
Carl Shapiro is an attorney?
Yeah, he's an attorney that has offered his services pro bono to us. And because of the use of surveillance cameras, I guess the merchants and the police around the St. Vincent's area and other civil rights violations, selective enforcement of jaywalking laws and all that, we're in the process of contemplating and getting suit against the city in force.
For damages and injunctive relief?
Yeah, we're going to, you know, try and nail them on this one so that they'll back up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's always what we do when they get testy, is you threaten them with some kind of legal action, and then they really have a fear of going to court.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like that at all, and spending money for lawyers and shit.
Well, you had some high-powered legal help back in the early 90s when, I guess, Whispering Pines, the county-funded homeless encampment area, was began full tilt as a consequence of you guys occupying the Board of Supervisors' chambers on a couple of occasions, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're still working with Lauren Hallinan of Legal Aid. In fact, she's providing some of the informational stuff to Carl Shapiro about, you know, the civil rights violations and stuff. So this that group is working together with Carl.
Down here in Santa Cruz, we're actually fighting an injunction to end a, I guess it's an 88-day vigil in front of City Hall against our city's sleeping ban in Santa Cruz. And we successfully fought off a TRO. Next Friday, we go to court to try to fight off the preliminary injunction. They want to bar demonstrators from being at City Hall between 8 and, I guess it's 10 at night at 8 in the morning. And apparently they decided the Constitution should only be a daytime affair, at least for homeless protesters. And we are also considering an injunction. We've actually gotten some legal help from Berkeley. Local attorneys, other than one or two, are absolutely useless, to attempt to get a federal injunction against the anti-homeless sleeping ban, similar to the one which Miami did under the Pottinger decision back in the early 90s. Any prospects of an injunction against your sleeping laws? What's the situation?
Well, you know, we kind of look at what's happening, what's in the air, and it seems we've seen some reversals on decisions, across the board.
You mean some bad decisions?
Yeah. Most recently, the panhandling law was reversed so that, ordinances to that effect now can have some force in communities.
And are they being enforced in Marin County?
More or less. They're not actually giving citations as much as reminding people that they cannot, should not be in front of these businesses and pressuring them to move, or they will get citations.
Mm-hmm.
And they make it uncomfortable enough that people do.
You're talking about use of the state misdemeanor panhandling law, which was for a while put on hold because of the lawsuit in San Francisco of, I guess, Eric Blaine or Blair, a unemployed Metro bus driver who successfully sort of dismantled all the panhandling laws for a number of years.
Right. Well, now they seem to be able to enforce those again. And although, I guess, as far as the city is concerned, in San Francisco, the mayor is not going to push that, as far as aggressive panhandling he is, but he doesn't seem inclined to be putting people in jail for being poor, you know.
Now, what about Corte Madera? You have a new law there?
Well, we've been kind of going back and forth with Corte Madera. Actually, that has not been settled yet. You know, we're still involved.
What was the law that they passed?
Well, they were trying to pass a law barring panhandling, especially towards the freeway exits.
Kind of signs at the freeway. Right.
There were vehicles that they felt it was going to cause some sort of health or safety hazard.
I'll bet.
Yeah, right. You know, all these laws are really, all these concerns they have here really, it's a matter in Marin of aesthetics. You know, they just don't like the look of poor people who may drive away potential customers.
Right.
Yeah.
In San Jose, I hear from the Community Homeless Alliance people, Scott Wagers and Nancy Nichols, that they're planning housing takeovers and sleepouts this summer. Any direct demonstrations planned in Marin?
No, not right now. We have been going over and helping with we went with the religious witness people in the city when they went to the Presidio, and
mm-hmm.
we participated in that with Terry Messman and the gang.
Terry Messman, of the formerly of the Union for the Homeless,
right.
Now for Dignity West Housing in Oakland.
Right, and there was an attempt to take over one of the buildings, and several people got arrested. But that doesn't really. We've been kind of looking at that. It doesn't seem to be leading anywhere. We've been kind of looking at trying to put together something, obtaining a house or houses, and building our own little community here. And instead of spinning our wheels.
3 days ago on the air, we played an interview with Michael O'Toole, if you remember him, from Sacramento, something of a homeless activist there who we met back in the early 90s when you and I and I guess Terry Bestman and Steven Switzer all got together with the Coalition on Homelessness in Sacramento and tried to rock the foundations of the Capitol and support the baby Sacramento Union of the Homeless, which I guess died in the crib. He's reporting from Eureka, Michael O'Toole is, that there's a 2.5-week encampment up there designed to focus on harassment of the homeless. Was actually broken up by vigilante action when the police said, go in and get them, boys. And
they like to do that, don't they?
Well,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've been trying to rethink our positions on that as far as the demonstrations and stuff. I mean, those are a way of gaining unity and gaining some kind of recognition of, you know, what's happening in the community. But to date, we haven't really achieved anything concrete except to, you know, put it into the public consciousness that there needs to be housing and there needs to be civil rights for people that are, you know, that are poor.
For folks coming north, Bob, how do poor people or homeless people or folks who are simply interested in your organization and in sort of communicating and doing volunteer work or just getting in touch, how do...
which is located at 16 Ritter Street, San Rafael, California. It's in the back part of what is known as the Human Concern Center, or Ritter House, more affectionately, because it's located at Ritter Street.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they can possibly get a meal at St. Vincent's.
They're open 7 days a week, so that's always food.
Until they get driven off by crazy merchants.
Yeah,
that's
always a problem, because we have one small shelter here, and sleeping out in the parks or wherever, or in your cars, is of course illegal, and right now the police are hassling people over that issue.
Is that over? Is that a countywide law or a city statute? Do you know?
Well, it's observed countywide, but more strictly enforced in San Rafael because of all the services are here, and there's more homeless people in this area, and more of a concern by the downtown merchants about what that means, you know, for them.
Any connection between the immigrant population who I heard was being harassed big time in San Rafael, you know, like Vietnamese immigrants and so forth, and the homeless folks? Any chance of some sort of coalition happening there?
Well, we've attempted that in the past and have kind of come to each other's demonstrations, but you know, right now I think what we're seeing in Marin, I think, is a kind of stepping back from demonstrations and such and coalitions and just, you know, it's kind of a incubation period, so to speak, to see what the next move is. I'm not quite sure, you know, what that's going to be.
How long you been in this business, Bob?
Too many years.
I see. Well, your beard...
I'm going to have to go now.
Hey, listen, thank you for taking the time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, Bob.
Bye.
They think that they have got the battle won. They forgive them, Lord, they know not what they've done. As sure as the sun will shine, gonna get my share now, what's mine? And then the harder they come, harder they fall, when all. I'll keep on fighting for the things I want. Mine, and then
And you're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. It looks like the extended edition today, May 27th, 1996. That was The Harder They Come in a version by Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary from the 70s. Last show we had an interview with Citizens Committee for the Homeless director Becky Johnson, who is actually the only member of that board of directors who has raised concerns publicly as well as internally about the community house project, the Trailers Not Trolls boondoggle, as I call it, which will be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, actually $1.3 million if you include the price of the property, on a 20 to 40 person program, fenced off, drug tested, yet dumped right next to the free meal where all kinds of folks who use drugs and alcohol are, a program that is being placed on the site of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which was the only place for homeless people to sleep, the only homeless campground during the day, closed by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless so they could press ahead with their fund magnet community house project, which they are doing. It's been delayed, as I mentioned earlier in the show, and it's going to be discussed tomorrow at the Social Services Subcommittee, which is a city council group, a subcommittee of the city council, which is going to determine whether to, well, they've already shoved them $150,000 now, apparently, according to yesterday's Sentinel, the Sunday Sentinel. They're looking to give them $600,000, or at least to okay a HUD request for that amount of money. I actually have that paper here. I wanted to read a little of that story. It's too bad I don't have Board of Directors member Becky Johnson with me here in the studio. She really is probably more on top of this than I am. But the story reads, Beach Motel eyed for homeless housing. It's on page A8 of the Sunday Sentinel. By the way, there is no Sentinel today because it's Memorial Day, in case you were wondering, as I was, where the Morning Sentinel was. It's amazing how sick you can get when you actually are wondering about the Sentinel. You actually have spent any energy looking to read that paper. But anyway, here's the story. Karen Clark is writing it. Karen Clark of the famous Smear the Protesters as Squatters fame. A plan to buy part of a beach area motel and turn it into permanent housing for homeless people may face rough sledding before the city council. Members of the council's redevelopment committee voted 2-1 to recommend support for the plan, which would be the start or part of a comprehensive $5.6 million grant application for 7 homeless projects throughout Santa Cruz County. Council support for buying half the 51-unit Westwind Motel on 2nd Street is mandatory because the Department of Housing and Urban Development won't consider the $1.5 million request without a letter of no objection signed by the city manager. And there's a lot of controversy about, I guess, Sil Cirillo, executive director of the redevelopment agency, who doesn't want to develop it because they wants a conference hotel, and Ted Whiting, vice president of the Seaside Corporation, which operates the beach boardwalk across the street from West Wind, doesn't like the idea, says it doesn't fit into the city plans for the area. Byers supports it. Kennedy kind of less enthusiastically supports it. Celia Matthews opposed it. Mercy Charities Housing California Santa Cruz, formerly the Community Housing Corporation, would buy the 25 West Wind motel rooms and convert them to permanent homes for people who can't quite make it on their own. There would be an on-site manager, counseling services available to homeless clients. So it's not housing. It's more jobs for social service providers, and very expensively provided housing at that. Not that I don't favor housing, you know, and even of this sort, but again, the interesting thing that interests me is, here's the last few paragraphs of the story. 7 projects, actually the group, more formally known as the Continuum of Care Coordinating Group, has been meeting for 3 months to fine-tune the grant application to HUD. The deadline is June 12th. 7 projects are on the group's wish list, and the permanent housing project is ranked number 6 in order of priorities. HUD officials make the final decision on which projects to fund, if any. The group's number one priority is an emergency services assessment project, which is expected to serve some 3,270 homeless people in need of quick assistance. That program is expected to cost about $310,000. Again, it's not clear what the money is going to do what, but nonetheless. The second priority, and here is where you should pay attention, folks, is spending approximately $662,000 to help Community House, a new village, I love it, village, we're talking 20 to 40 people, of modular homes, those are donated Stanford trailers, on River Street that will serve as transitional housing for homeless people still learning skills to survive in permanent homes. I guess such skills as how to piss into a bottle, since the whole thing is going to be drug tested. The application to HUD for money to buy the Westwind Motel will be on the council's afternoon agenda. That's tomorrow, folks. That session begins at 3:30 p.m. I don't know if they're going to be discussing community house. You can find that out if you're interested in this community house project. Again, the project that replaced the only legal place to sleep in Santa Cruz, and it's, that place is still fenced off and forbidden homeless and community use, and will be for the next 6 months, it looks like. You can find out about that tomorrow at 8 o'clock or around there at City Hall at the City Manager's Conference Room when the Social Services Subcommittee will be meeting. And around that issue, let me continue playing an interview that we began last show, which Becky Johnson talks about the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which she sits on the board, and which had a recent board of directors meeting last Thursday. So here it is, picking up from last week, Becky Johnson being interviewed on Bathrobe Spears Broadside.
Have the homeless tenancy was subsidized by other sources, and he gave a number of different answers. First he said, well, if you can't pay, then you can come in free, or at least some people can, and most people can, and 50% of the people can. And Jane Yokoyama, a council member, interrupted and said, wait a minute, most of this is supposed to be subsidized. And he said, oh, well, all these figures have reached the Social Service Subcommittee. I just don't have them with me. We'll get them to you some other later today, later tomorrow. And they set a meeting for the next week. They set a meeting for, I think it was the 20th or the 21st. And then, of course, that meeting was canceled, and we learned that no documents have been forwarded to the Social Services Subcommittee. And I guess by this time, we still have no documents. Did you get any, well, did you see any documents at the CCH board meeting on Thursday?
About what the participants in Community House would have to spend?
Or about corrected documents, which actually added up properly in terms of outflow of cash and the expected grants coming in for construction and who is going to have to pay what and so forth?
Well, yes, I did receive some documents.
Oh, good.
On that, which I'm trying to locate here. Seem to have put them somewhere where I can't immediately find them.
Well, maybe if you've received those documents, they've also been received by the Social Services Subcommittee, which is due to have its agenda published on Friday. That's tomorrow. No, that's today. Sorry. And since they're meeting on Tuesday and their agenda's coming out, maybe we'll have access to those documents publicly. Those of us, for example, who, if we set foot in a CCH meeting, will be seized, arrested, and charged with a misdemeanor, which seems to be the new way of dealing with, well, perhaps it's the old way, because they've done this on their property as well, with critics that they don't like the radio shows.
Oh, well, a new name has been added to that list.
Oh, I understand you are having problems with activist Crosswire's Chris Brazda.
Yeah, Chris was at the meeting, and he sat fairly quietly during the whole meeting, but after the meeting was concluded, he attempted to take a photograph of Daryl Darling, and Daryl objected and did not, you know, said, I do not give you permission to take my photograph. And then Chris started yelling and screaming and swearing and shouting, and it was actually a physical altercation that happened between him and Paul Lee. When Paul literally pushed him out the door, it was kind of a shoving match, and Paul pushed him out the door and locked the door, and immediately after that incident, he spoke with Dr. Alan Bayer, and they decided that they were going to exclude Chris Brozda from all future meetings.
Did they take a vote on this?
No, the meeting had already been concluded at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Well, this may pose something of an issue of principle for you. I understand you have favored the notion of open meetings. For example, in my case, when I was excluded, you favored my right to return to the meetings, even though Paul Lee and Daryl Darling and Paul Meursault would have preferred to have me out of the meetings, if not out of the country.
In your case, they claimed that you did not follow the process.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is a tape of an interview with Becky Johnson of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless from last week.
So you were saying in my case was different?
Yeah, I thought they accused you of not having followed their process in their meetings, and I disagreed. I was there, and what I observed was that you waited your turn to speak. You asked to speak a number of times. You were prevented from speaking each time, and finally, Paul Lee allowed you to speak. And at that point, you attempted to play a 45-second tape recording, and Paul started shouting you down, saying, "No, no, we don't want to hear that," you know. And you continued to play the tape, and then he ended the meeting prematurely and claimed you disrupted the meeting. That wasn't what I observed.
With Chris Brazda.
With Chris, he was shouting and threatening, and his behavior was actually frightening, you know. Mm-hmm. And I would say, although both incidences, tempers ran high, and in your case, you were being a very vocal critic, but following process. In Chris's place, in the incident with Chris, he was being threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a distinct difference. And I have criticized CCH, and in fact, I was the lone vote, saying that we should have this one meeting a month open to the public and open to the media.
Meaningless as it may be, because as I understand, my impression was a lot of the decisions are worked out beforehand in an executive board meeting that happens an hour or two before.
That's pretty much how it works.
So what about you as a board member? Do you have access to that executive board meeting? Can you just go to it, or are you excluded from that?
Geez, I don't know. I've never really tried to attend an executive board meeting. I really couldn't say, but I could find out and get back to you about that.
Now, there were some old issues that that I urged you to bring up at this meeting, including, my exclusion, the exclusion of tape recorders and video equipment from the meeting, the failure of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is the emergency shelter program, which the only program operating in Santa Cruz, and now I think it's been reduced to 26 bed spaces, which almost nobody has access to because they're taken up with older and more disabled homeless people.
Actually, Ron Howard, who is the director of that program, stated at the meeting yesterday that the number of people in the program varies from day to day, and it runs from as little as 14 on some days to as high as 56 people.
Really? So there actually are spaces for drop-ins?
It's a day-by-day thing. It's how much, you know, when Ron calls up the various churches and asks them if they have space, and he says on the days when it's raining or it's cold, they make a much greater effort to find more spaces.
So the ISSP is, however, a crucial program for people who wish not to be illegal at night in Santa Cruz. If you're not in some sort of New Life Center or drug program, which is a sort of a more difficult and all-inclusive thing to do, you have to get shelter in a place either through a friend or through this program. And if you're excluded from this program, you're out of luck. You're subject to the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, which makes it illegal to sleep after 11 and gives you a ticket of $162 and or a jail term if you get arrested a second time within 48 hours, or at least that's written on the books. Now, people who have been excluded from this program in the last year My concern is they've had no right of appeal. For example, a woman named Gina was excluded last fall. She presented a request for a hearing before CCH, and she has been ignored for the last 6 months. I asked you to bring this issue before the ISSP, I should say before Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which runs the ISSP, and haven't heard anything.
Well, I did pursue that particular case, wrote a letter to Paul Marceau, who was the director at that time, and he called me back, and his version of the story was, you know, that she had burned her bridges on a number of occasions and that they felt they could not have her in the program anymore. But, I mean, as far as...
As far as the process goes for admitting people...
Like a formal appeals process.
Right.
I'm not aware that she went through that.
Is there an appeals process? That's my question.
There's supposed to be. There's supposed to be a grievance procedure.
Right. Well, I've never been able to determine what it is, and I guess you as a board member have never been told what it is either.
That's correct.
So... another issue you wanted to bring up at this meeting, as I understand it, was something about the campground and what there's been some mention by Councilmember Celia Scott of funding available from the federal government for campgrounds, and complaints by CCH that they don't have the money to deal with the campground. Last year when they ran the campground, it was such a problem because they didn't have enough money, and they went, you know, panhandling for money to the Above the Line Community Consortium and got some, and now they're panhandling to the city council for $150,000 for Community House, which was granted them as a loan, I guess, although now they may want it as a grant, and I'd like to ask your opinion on that, too. Is that happening as well? But what about the campground? Are they willing to at least seek funding for a campground program, which even if they don't run it, somebody else can? Are they going to use their property for possible campground use? What's cooking?
The campground issue never came up.
Didn't you seek to put that on the agenda?
Ironically, Daryl Darling was reporting quite a bit extensively about HUD funding. He claimed that they had applied for every single HUD fund loan that was available, and that there was no money. This was the refrain that was repeated over and over again, was we just don't have enough money. We need to raise funds. We need to get alternate sources. We need to get private citizens to provide funding. And as far as any funding for a campground, there just is no consensus on CCH at this point in time for it. As you know, I'm a major proponent of a campground for homeless people. I consider it to be one of the most needed services, meaning a legal place for homeless people to sleep. And from the homeless people that I have talked to, a campground suits their needs to a great deal. It gives them a semblance of a home base, some place where they can keep property beyond what they can carry with them at one time, and a community of sorts, certain more security, but mostly freedom from arrest. That is a huge issue with the homeless people I've talked to, and I have spoken privately with Paul Lee about the campground issue, and he believes that the stumbling block is a site. But at the meeting yesterday, it sounded like the stumbling block was funding. I don't know. Doesn't look like there's anything on the horizon.
Well, this seems very strange to me, because our understanding, you and I were both at this meeting with Celia Scott, which met about the protest activities, and when she mentioned that there was funding available, I also learned from Assistant City Manager Gay Strand, that Daryl Darling and Paul Marceau, I guess no longer with the CCH, but Daryl Darling certainly, was present at a consortium of care meetings, in which it was made clear that there was funding available, and there's a deadline date for applying for a campground funding by June 12th. Now, seems to me that if Darling didn't speak up at the meeting that you were at yesterday or hasn't brought any proposals to get that kind of money, what the CCH is saying is not that there isn't a site and not that there isn't money, but there is no will. In fact, there is a contrary will not to open a campground, not to run a campground, not to even front for a campground.
Well, my impression was that whatever funding was available from HUD, that Daryl was more interested in having that earmarked for community house than any seed money for a camp.
Well, I think it's funding from FEMA, not HUD. Or actually, it's another group, another federal group that has this funding. Celia Scott has looked into it, and I don't know if she's talked to Darling about it, but I suspect Darling knows about it. Celia said it. She's been mentioning it publicly for the last 3 or 4 months since the open-air shelter subcommittee, which she was one of the chief movers on, or non-movers, since the committee didn't move anywhere. But nonetheless, she held those meetings and prided herself on the fact that she was holding those open-air shelter meetings. So I think the information has been public for some time. And it's not been acted upon by anybody in the CCH, and I was really concerned because CCH does have a nonprofit status, and so it can apply for these funds, and it's part of the consortium of care. In essence, what they're saying is we'd rather have homeless people arrested at night outside. Apparently, your CCH hasn't even made any public statements recently about opposing the sleeping ban, much less supporting the protesters at City Hall. We'd rather have people arrested outside than distract in any way from our attempt to get this fun magnet Community House Trailers Not Trolls project, which is going to serve an infinitesimal number of people, and mainly people who have checks already in an environment that probably isn't going to work.
Well, I think that the CCH is in kind of an embarrassing position when it comes to the protest at City Hall. On the one hand, they're very much cultivating a relationship with Scott Kennedy, Jane Yokoyama, and Mike Rodkin.
And these are the people who have asked that the First Amendment be suspended at City Hall and were slapped in the face by the judge yesterday or 2 days ago, Judge Stevens, who said, no, there's no emergency here, at least nothing that requires a temporary restraining order. Now they're trying to get a preliminary injunction, spending city money to do this. We're talking the 5-2 majority on the council that voted secretly to seek to have the entire demonstration deported, and also to make sleeping anywhere downtown punishable by perhaps up to 6 months in jail on contempt of court charges.
Yeah, that was quite a far-reaching scope the city council attempted to do there. I have to applaud Judge Stevens for having seen through this and having denied the temporary restraining order. However, the protesters at City Hall do still face this impending injunction.
Yeah, this May 31st is the court date on that. But was there an outcry of rage from the CCH that their charges, the homeless people and the homeless protesters, were about to be levied with incredible fines and jail for the act of sleeping downtown?
Well, as I was saying, I think that CCH is attempting to cultivate this relationship with Mayor Rodkin, Scott Kennedy, and Jane Yokoyama in particular, because of their continuing need for funds, mostly for Community House, and that they're hesitant to criticize the city council members on the sleeping ban at this point in time. And so they've taken the position of taking no position, of maintaining an eerie silence on this matter.
Well, we're not just talking the sleeping ban. We're talking an application for an injunction that will put people in jail for months if they fall asleep. Months. Up to 6 months in jail is what my attorney, David Beauvais, and he's also the attorney for this particular action of the demonstrators, one of the three attorneys covering it, suggested is going to be the case if this preliminary injunction is granted or if that TRO is granted. We didn't see Paul Lee at the hearing. I'm sorry, say that again, what you were saying. I wish to go ahead.
Let's see. Actually, I didn't see any member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless other than myself either at City Hall or at any of the court hearings regarding this impending injunction.
Mm-hmm. Well, Did anything else happen at the meeting that you think is newsworthy for those who are trying to follow the shadowy doings of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless? I should say the financial bone chasing that's going on here, because that seems to me to be the be all and the end all at the moment. I mean, they're ignoring all the other issues. And what about Harold? What's his name? Morse. Who claimed that he wanted to do some kind of campground, or he talked to you about that, and now...
He had raised that at the retreat that took place last Saturday, and he brought up the issue that of the campground, that CCH needed to do some more work on that. However, none of that came up at yesterday.
Was he present?
He was present.
So he didn't bring it up. He retreated, so to speak. So,
Let's see. Well, they formed a new executive committee for press relations and community development.
Mm-hmm.
And they discussed...
Snowing the public? Is that what that's called?
They discussed hiring a new community development director, creating another staff position.
Oh, so they can get another position funded and, shall we say... put money into a much-needed job.
That's right. That was one of the things that happened at yesterday's meeting.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that that shows them vigilantly defending the interests of the homeless people in whose name they are trying to raise these hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Well, let's see. What else happened? Somebody came there. I'm not sure. I think his name was Forrest. He's not a member of CCH, and he wanted to put something... There's apparently a conference that's going on in Istanbul, Turkey, currently now, involving 50,000 people, and it's called Habitat 2.
Mm. Never heard of it.
And
although I think I've heard something about Istanbul and some kind of conference.
Right, and so they made arrangements to send a communication to this conference, where they were going to send information about the Homeless Garden Project.
By the way, why don't we give us unless there's more on the actual substance that CCH did, or you have some interesting insights, these details, I think, are less perhaps pertinent. You've been trying to get the only homeless board member who's now in jail in Virginia back to California and back to the Homeless Garden Project, Ray McMinn. Do you have an update on that?
He is attempting to have his parole transferred to Santa Clara after having Santa Cruz...
This is parole for murder and rape, right? He's a serious criminal?
Yeah, he stole $8 from a guy he knew 25 years ago.
And how many years in jail did he get for that?
14 and a half the first time, but now he's been in jail since last July.
Because they picked him up on a parole violation?
Yeah, well... Apparently, when Ray was on parole for 6 years in the state of Virginia, and he had requested from his parole officer three times to be allowed to go to California, back to California, and Santa Cruz. This is where he was born and raised. This is his home, and he was denied. And then he left without permission in 1989. That was why he was picked up this summer. For having violated parole. And
have you ever had these facts double-checked with a hostile source? I mean, have you ever confronted a parole officer with these facts about is it not true that he was jailed for this tiny crime and so forth and so on, and gotten them confirmed by that source?
Well, yes and no. I've talked to... the Interstate Parole Office in Virginia, the Interstate Parole Office in Sacramento. I've talked to the Governor's Office in Virginia, Governor's Office in Sacramento.
Do we have these facts?
I've talked to Ray's public defender here in Santa Cruz.
Do we have these facts confirmed by anyone other than Ray himself, in other words? This makes it a heart-rending story, but
what's interesting is that I've told this story many, many a time, and none of these authorities have ever disputed it.
I see. And presumably they would have had the facts at their fingertips, or they would be in the dark.
In fact, when I spoke to a member of the governor's office in Virginia, he called the Virginia State Prison and pulled up all of Ray's files, and then he got back to me and with what he thought was, well, you didn't tell me about that he'd also escaped and was up for grand theft, which is true. After Ray had been in prison about 9 years, he commandeered a laundry van, escaped. He did escape. He left the property of the prison, and he was apprehended an hour later.
Mm-hmm.
So they charged him with grand theft because of the prison vehicle.
Was he convicted?
However, which they gave him more time for.
I see. So
he served.
Mm-hmm. So he served out his full sentence for grand theft of a laundry truck?
Yeah, apparently this, yes, he did. So apparently this official from the governor's office in Virginia thought that was, a further indication of the criminal nature of Ray McMinn.
Mm-hmm. And then so use that as the basis for...
Dispute anything else I said about the $8 or the 15-minute trial or that the jury deliberated for only 8 minutes. He didn't dispute any of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't know if Ray may be released on parole in Virginia then and essentially be stuck out there, so he may be the Citizens Committee homeless director in exile, huh?
That's looks like that's going to happen.
But you have a new, isn't there some sort of new person? You had a new applicant for that position, or for at least for another position as a homeless person on the board of directors?
Well, I brought, let me back up a little bit. When I talked to Paul Lee over the weekend, he told me that one of the issues that had come up at this retreat that I was invited to and I was unable to attend was one of the failings of CCH is that they don't have a homeless representative on the board, which according to their bylaws they're supposed to have. And I told him, I said, well, I'm planning on bringing a candidate for that position to the meeting. He said, well, great. So I brought Patrick Ring with me. And so
local homeless man.
Yeah, and Patrick has been homeless for 7 months. He's also affiliated with the group Food Not Bombs. And
Feed the People, I think, is the group.
Feed the People,
right.
Yeah. Oh, terrible faux pas there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had asked Patrick if he would be interested in being the homeless representative, and he indicated he would. So he came to the meeting, and no one else at the meeting had brought an applicant for the homeless representative, so we'll see.
Well, is there anything else that I should know about before that our listeners should know about regarding CCH?
I don't know. I think we may have bored them enough.
I think so. We're all about to go to sleep now. So thank you, Becky Johnson, and well, keep us advised as to what new scams, I mean plans, the CCH has.
Okay.
Thanks again.
And that was the update from Beggarbacker Becky, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board of Directors, also a video artist and an active worker in the City Hall sleepers protest. I believe today she is chugging away without any sleep, gathering together declarations and typing them up for the preliminary injunction hearing happening on Friday, in which the city attempts to not only make it criminal to sleep, but even more criminal to sleep. If the preliminary injunction passes, if it's granted by the judge, you sleep downtown anywhere. If you're cited in the injunction, you can be held in contempt of court, which can be punished by up to 5 days without a trial or up to 6 months with a jury trial, which that should be some way to make those homeless people stay awake. I mean, hey, nothing else seems to have worked. So, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris, or Bathrobe's Pierre Robert. It's almost time to end the show. A couple of brief announcements again. We are going to have a declaration signing party. If you've been involved with the City Hall sleepers protest and you want to put your declaration into evidence about any kind of uneven enforcement of laws or no places for homeless people to sleep, or the demonstration is not a mass of fecal rats blocking the sidewalk, as Mayor Rotkin seems to be stating in his declaration, and the city wants to claim in order to clear everyone away from there, you should get in touch with Catnip Kate Wells, the attorney. Give her a call at 457-1545, 457-1545, and make a declaration of your own on this issue. She can help you do that. You can also come down to our declaration signing party. Bring your own brie and bottled water or whatever you have. We're going to be signing up or signing declarations to forward to the attorneys in Berkeley, who will then be presenting them to the city attorney on Tuesday, which is our deadline tomorrow, Tuesday, for getting in declarations for the Friday hearing. It's really quite a rush to judgment, usually, particularly when there are, what, some 140 people against whom this injunction is designed, and 40 of them are named parties, and there are 100 John or Jane Does. You get more time to prepare a response. Indeed, the city would seem would need more time in order to serve these people. But, hey, apparently it's full steam ahead with this injunction, and we'll see just how far it goes. I have some more stuff to play for you. I'd like to apologize to those of you who are expecting me to show up. I'm instead stuck here at the studio, lost in my my favorite pastime, radio programming here. I really enjoy getting this information out on the air. And I really wish that, folks, you had a chance to call in. And I really hope you really do take the opportunity to call in. If you find something that you've struck your fancy or pulled your chain or caused you some anger, give me a call to 423-HUFF. 423-4833, and leave me a message. I don't care what you say. I don't care how mean or nasty you are, as long as you're not terribly boring and long-winded. And we'll put that on the air on Friday when we'll have another show from 10 to 12. And in the meantime, how about a nice musical break while I scavenge for our last tape, for our last segment here. I've always liked Peter Yarrow. See if you like him, too.
Mistaken of Food Not Bonds.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Hey,
yeah.
Keith, you've been surgeried up here recently.
Yeah, I spent the last week and recovering from surgery, and it's been pretty unpleasant.
And perhaps you recovered from the Food Not Bonds meeting last night as well?
Oh, I didn't go to that.
Because I know that one of the issues that was going to be raised there, possibly by phone, by attorney David Beauvais, was the question of getting Food Not Bonds to agree to seek to dissolve the court order, which in 1989, I guess now it's 1994, since there were two court orders since then, made it illegal for that organization, Food Not Bonds, to serve free food in San Francisco anywhere without appropriate permits.
Uh-huh.
And part of that involves the case of the poor, unfortunate martyred hero Robert Norris Kahn, whom you may know,
mm-hmm.
who has been the only person ever convicted of serving free food in San Francisco, and he now faces 2 months in jail on June 7th at a 1 o'clock hearing before Judge Robert Barkley.
That's true, and that was advertised in the New York Times.
It was indeed mentioned in a New York Times story.
Yeah.
One of the few instances where food bombs has actually made it into the pages of the New York Times.
Yeah, kind of funny, huh? That was sort of a funny story. Dead mentioned the words food bombs. What can you expect?
Indeed. But in any case, the question is, is Food Not Bombs the organization? And of course, you can't speak for them. You're just one member. But what do you think of the idea of getting the injunction dissolved so that it cannot be used against any other Food Not Bombs members, and also so that the conviction against me, and indeed I am Robert Norris Kahn, is vacated, because in essence, I'm not sure if I'm using the proper terminology, but there's a retroactivity involved where you cannot put someone in jail for something that is no longer a crime, and actually is on the books no longer a crime. I mean, it's true that the city of San Francisco is no longer enforcing the injunction at the moment, unless there's something new that I haven't heard of.
Well, my sense is this, that Louise Rene, who's the city attorney here in San Francisco, has been fighting our efforts to dissolve this injunction now since even when it first happened in 89, and she's currently very actively resisting our attempts to dissolve it.
And what form does that resistance take?
She has her attorneys lie to judges, and that would be happening even...
In what way does the attorney lie?
Well, they will say... for instance, the issue that, like what happened with you, whether we applied, you know, they say, well, they fundamentally say that if Food Not Bombs applied for these permits, that they would get them. And, of course, you can apply until you're blue in your face and you won't get them.
Indeed, you've applied how many times for a Rex and Park?
35 times.
Hmm.